Hi, I'm Tanya Ransom, creator and executive producer of Nightlight, a horror podcast featuring creepy tales written by Black writers from all over the world. And today I'm here with Khalif Aziz, author of Mitochondrial Assimilation. How are you today, Khalif Aziz?
I'm good. I'm doing very good. Thanks for asking.
Excellent. Excellent. And I know that you guys can't see this who are listening right now, but Khalif Aziz has an amazing hat and bow tie.
Oh, thank you.
Actually, you know, are you okay if I like screenshot this? So, you know, when I promote this, that we
can... Okay, but like, let me make sure you get the ankh too. It's like my whole thing.
Oh, yeah. You got like a whole setup here. Yeah. Okay. So we are going to take a screenshot. So that way all you wonderful listeners out there can see. Yes. See this lovely outfit. Amazing. Amazing. Okay. So let's get started. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what inspired you to write this particular story?
Right. So what inspired me is, you know, that little adage we all learn in school, the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. The mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. And I remember hearing about this this idea, the speculation that the presence of the mitochondria in modern day plant animal cells represents a symbiotic relationship from way in the, you know, early in the early days of like single celled organisms. One organism absorbed another and they sort of just became one, and that's why the mitochondria has a different DNA. Now I remember hearing that and thinking, number one, like, wow, I have no idea what any of this means, but also specifically, but I wonder, what does the mitochondria get out of this? Because I have like this very animistic like view of the world, especially things in nature, you know? And so it's a little bit like personification, but like part of my belief structure is that non-human things, non-sentient things still have some sort of will per se, you know? So I thought, okay, so what does the mitochondria get out of this? And I just thought about that for a minute, about how the mitochondria just is the powerhouse of the cell. And I wonder, okay, why does the mitochondria care if we're healthy and happy? And so from there, I just started writing some lines in my journal, just in this very creepy Welcome to Night Vale like tone, about the mitochondria being part of some sentient hive mind. And from there, I kind of left the story alone for a minute. You know, I left the concept alone. It wasn't fully developed. I just said, this isn't really anything, and just moved on to other stuff. Then there was this contest for Black writers to make Lovecraftian horror stories they were supposed to be set in historic moments for the Black community. And so while scratching my brain trying to figure out a story for this, I thought back to this vague notion I had about the mitochondria having some sinister design for humanity. And I thought, yo, I think I have something here. And so
you do.
Yeah. And so at the same time, I was thinking about Americanness and how America is how the belief structure of America, it operates almost like the boot. It's like, I can't find the exact words for it, but it's very religious almost. This idea that, the idea that to be American is to be Christian, that there are certain figures in American history, George Washington, but also Martin Luther King, who sort of represent almost like, are almost like messiahs, like they are true inheritors of this concept of Americanism, patriotism, freedom. And so I thought, okay, how can I make it scary? And so I thought about that. I was thinking about the idea of colonization and of course assimilation, the way that we as people and also as communities change ourselves in order to better fit into the new societies and new systems that we find ourselves in. And lastly, I was just thinking about how, you know, when Black people were freed from slavery, that there was some cost there, you know, there was some stuff that mm-hmm. we gained. There was definitely, for every gain that Black people have had in America, there's also been something that we've lost. Example, the civil rights movement. We gained protections in employment. We gained the ability to go to the schools of our choice. But we also lost some of the economic systems that we created to sustain ourselves during segregation. Mm-hmm. And with the end of slavery, we gained the American identity, but that also came with, I won't say it caused the loss of African identity because it's more complex than that, but there's definitely certain parts of African identity that we were able to retain during slavery that we eventually lost, be it religion, storytelling, art forms. The more we got from the point of slavery, the more that sort of changed in how we expressed our identities. And so, long story short, I just had all these thoughts running through my head, and I just started writing this story about what if the mitochondria had a sinister design for humanity, and a part of that sinister design affected Black people in this way that was very unique to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And honestly, that's what sold me on this story. So, you know, for me, with Nightlight, one of the things that I really try to do is showcase stories that aren't about slavery, because a lot of people have this impression that Black people could only write about Black pain, Black, you know, right. slavery, segregation, things like that. So it's kind of a tough sell for me if a story, you know, is, you know, very clearly about slavery or, you know, segregation. But this was such a unique twist that I was like, you know, this is how you do this kind of story, you know, to show that Black people are more dimensional than just writing about Black pain and, you know, the painful parts of Black history. So, I mean, honestly, like, first of all, like, I'm a science nerd, right. So, you know, like, so for me, you know, the title, like, as soon as I saw the title, I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then I started to read it. And then I was, you know, at first I was like, you know, I don't know, like, you know, this is kind of, you know, going in, you know, slavery territory. But then, like, you know, there was this moment when it clicked for me that, you know, the mitochondria was a character basically in the story. And then I was like, oh, wow. Like, I, you know, I've seen, like, you know, haunted houses be characters of stories, but I've never seen, like, a component of a cell being right. a character of a story. So that's what sold me on this. It's such a unique perspective and a unique way of looking at a story. And, you know, I think you did it successfully, obviously.
Oh, thank you.
I wouldn't have, you know, had the story on there. But I do wonder, like, how, you know, you had your premise that you wanted to sort of explore this idea of, like, you know, what if the mitochondria was sentient and sinister? How did you decide on the ending for the story? And it's okay if you spoil it, because we air this after the story is already aired. So if you're listening now and you have not listened to the story, there's probably going to be a spoiler here. Go back, listen to the story, and then come back to the interview.
So for the ending, there was an inkling I had at a certain point to make the story bigger than what finally went to print, you know? And part of that was exploring what is the mitochondria's plan with Black Americans. And part of that, we would have seen, like, maybe some of the more controversial parts of Black history, you know, be explained by, that's because that's what the, which it's not truly the mitochondria, you know, like, because like in the story, I have the narrator describe how the slime sort of removed the mitochondria. It became a new mitochondria for him. And so it's that thing, that God, like dark, scary God, that is what's driving Black people to maybe get involved with, for example, driving Native Americans off their land during the Trail of Tears, et cetera. And so I came to that because I really wanted to look at, it's hard to really wrap into words, but I want to look at this, when we gain privileges, what are we gaining privileges in? You know, what kind of system are we gaining privileges in? Do we necessarily want those privileges? And when we gain those privileges, or is that being equally given to everyone? You know, and the answer, of course, is not. So for the very last line, none of them spoke to me. That's a line that some of my friends didn't really get, you know? And that's me pointing out that, like, even though the narrator did the exact same initiation as them, even though the narrator will still be serving this this like slimy goo for the rest of his life, just as they are, even though now it's in his body, it's going to be spread on to any biological children he has, you know, and so on and so forth, that he's still not one of them, because now they know that he's gay. They know he's gay, he's not one of them. And so he knew that would happen. He knew that was going to happen. There's a line where I think this was in the final story, I don't know if this is an earlier draft, where he says that he doesn't truly believe that there is such a thing as freedom for him or Black men like him. Mm-hmm. And at the end, he's proven right, you know?
Right.
Like, his freedom is the fact that he can go off, live with you know, his boyfriend and be somewhat happy, but he always has to know that he's not truly an American, because America has no room for him.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I think that still exists today.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, a lot of people, you know, not just Black people and not just gay people, but, you know, it's seen as very un-American to be anything but white and Christian in a lot of communities. What made you decide to make your main character, the narrator, gay Black man?
Thinking on the same principle, how do I demonstrate that, yes, and like the end of slavery was good for him, it was decidedly good for him, but he's specifically still suffering in a way that sets him apart from the Black community. And I kept thinking, how do I demonstrate that? And then, you know, it seemed obvious, like, hey, maybe he's gay. Like, that's the reason. But at the same time, I didn't want to say that, honestly, there is no real reason the main character's gay. That just happens with me sometimes. I just accidentally write a character and I'm like, there's no way this character is straight. This makes no sense.
Yeah, they're speaking to you, so you know, you know how they want to be. I mean, yeah. I think it was an excellent choice for the story. You know, I don't think the story would have landed nearly as well.
Right.
You know, with a straight character as the narrator. But, you know, one thing I do find really interesting, and I'd like to get your perspective on, is, you know, especially in the Black community, I'm not male, you know, obviously. I am not gay. So I don't know what it's like to be a gay Black man, but I do know that, you know, based on the people that I grew up with, that it's very looked down upon to be a gay Black male. You know, there's something, you know, yes, you know, white men look at gay white men, you know, in the same sort of way, you know, looking down on them, but I feel like it's a completely different story for gay Black men. You know, it's a big deal to come out as a gay Black male in the world today, you know, and you're thinking, you know, you're writing this story, you know, set, you know, in times of, you know, slavery, you know, late 1800s, and, you know, I can't even imagine how bad it would have been then. And I think, you know, that's another horrifying element to this story, is that extra dimension of suffering that the narrator endures because of who they are.
Right.
I think you did an amazing job choosing your characters and choosing your setting. You know, it just all works really, really well. And, you know, especially, like, you know, now since I've talked to you about the story, you know, this is one of the reasons why I like to do these interviews, because there's so much that, you know, when you're reading the story, you don't necessarily realize that this is what the author was thinking about. But you know, speaking to you, you know, it's very clear that you think about writing in a very intellectual way, at least for this story. So I'm interested to know, like, what your writing process is. Are all of your stories this intellectual, or is it just this particular one that you kind of went down that path?
Most of my stories are intellectual, I would definitely say. Example, the book I'm working on, that's a very fantasy heavy book. And I actually use like some of the arguments that I was, well, not arguments, but, like some of the views that was being shaped while I was doing some anthropological research into crafting this magical system. Like, I love, like, that's why I like writing. I've always been the person that likes observing people. You know, I was never it was never easy for me to fit in with people. So I just learned at a young age how to just observe people, observe situations, and just notice things like that.
Yeah.
And so a lot of my stories, yeah, they do take on this very intellectual route. Almost Black trauma lies at the heart of almost all of them. But I try to really dive really, really deep into it. You know, I try to and there's the concept of, you know, Afro-surrealism. I would see myself as an Afro-surrealist writer. I try to really look at not only how is this traumatic, but also how does this fundamentally alter how we view reality, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, and so, This is just the thing for me. All my work does is, even when I'm trying to write a fun story, you know, it's it's layered. You know, I look at let's look at pop culture. Let's look at history. Let's look at mythology. You know, and it winds up being something that I zoom out of, and I'm like, did I actually write this? I don't want to say it seems too good, because, you know, I'm not trying to sound egotistical. I'm like, I didn't write this. No.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that that's what sets, you know, at least the story for me. I haven't read anything else of yours, but that's what sets this story apart is, you know, like I said, there's a whole lot of writing out there, you know, especially for film, you know, a lot of film out there that, you know, it seems that Black trauma is the star of the story. And, you know, not that there's anything wrong with that. I just feel like that's kind of what Black writers are pigeonholed into doing. You know, like, we want to write a story about, you know, Black trauma or slavery or whatever, you know, it's like, okay, well, you know, it's like Hollywood feels like we don't have other stories we can tell, you know, or at least before Jordan Peele. I think, you know, that's changed in recent years, obviously, but I think that that's still in a way pretty specific to him. You know, cause there's other, you know, shows and things that are coming out, like Lovecraft Country,
right?
You know, was definitely about, you know, segregation and, you know, the pain and the trauma of that. But, you know, there was a twist on it that, you know, made it interesting. And I see this as something that falls along those same lines, you know, so I was really happy to hear you earlier say that you were kind of like taking on, you know, Lovecraft mythology with this and combining it with this intellectual pursuit that you were doing. I think, you know, and this is just my opinion, but, you know, I think that's the best way to explore this kind of story, because I feel like these stories that are just, you know, oh, Black people were slaves and, you know, the slave escaped, yay, everybody's happy. You know, those stories have been done 100 times, you know, they're not that interesting to me anymore. But stories like this, you know, definitely are, because they explore something a little bit deeper than just someone struggling through the trauma of slavery or segregation or, you know, whatever the case might be. So tell me a little bit about your writing process. You said for this that you just kind of wrote like a line or two in a journal and then it kind of came from that. Is that your typical process?
No, I have a very... we'll say varied process, which is to say, you know, sometimes I'm able to plan out a story and, you know, beginning, middle, end, whole bulleted list, every character planned out, and I go to write it and it does not become that at all.
I do the same thing.
it's very hard for me to stay structured with the story. This version of mitochondrial assimilation is not the only version. The version I wrote for the contest was much shorter. I actually was able to, post it as a series of little graphics on my Instagram.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And this version, the longer version, this is actually a combination of the version for the contest and four different rough drafts that I came up with and then stopped because they were all too long. I tend to go overboard. I tend to go into too much detail. I tend to type with my eyes closed. Sometimes, I get a story out and I look at it, I'm like, oh, this is good. One draft, perfect. Well, not perfect, but more or less, no major edits. This story though, this one needed a lot of edits. I had to really go through, perform surgery on the story, trying to get it just right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're exploring a really complex topic here, right? It's more than one topic, there's a lot of complexity to this story. So it's not surprising that, you did have to do that surgery on it to make sure that you communicated what you were trying to communicate with the story. So let's talk about Black horror in general.
Yeah.
If somebody was new to Black horror, they hadn't read any books by Black writers that were horror or watched any films directed or written by Black filmmakers, where would you suggest that people begin?
Oh, where would I suggest that people begin? Yeah, that's a tricky one. It is, there's mm-hmm. There's a lot of really good stuff out there, Where I began was this old Negro folktale called, and I don't know if this is the actual name, I know this was the name in the collection of old Negro folktales that I was reading. It was called, Better Wait Till Martin Comes. And it's a story about this man who crashes his car, winds up at this house, trying to take refuge from the weather. And these talking cats keep coming into the house, staring at him menacingly, and then saying to each other, better wait till Martin comes. And each cat that comes is bigger than the other. And it just terrifies the guy. And so finally, he just decides to just take his chances and leave the house. And I was 9 or 10 years old when I first came across the story. And from that moment, I knew I wanted to write Black horror stories. I know I wanted to be a writer, but I knew I know I wanted to write Black horror stories. And I kind of tucked that away to the side for years and didn't think about it again, but it was always in the back of my head, And then as I got older, I did, I rediscovered Eve's Bayou, which I had been watching since I was 4. Yeah, I know that's not a movie for a 4-year-old, but that was my favorite movies growing up.
It's such a good movie, though.
It's an amazing movie. Yeah, it's an amazing movie. And even though it's not necessarily horror, it's a very dark and spooky story. Yeah. There was another called The Piano Lesson, which was a Black trauma slavery movie, but it was a very unique one about this piano and a piano that was in this family for multiple generations. And throughout the story, we never get any confirmation if the piano is truly haunted or not, but we see the effects that this piano and the debate over whether to sell it or to keep it has on this family. And it was just it was character driven, and the descriptions of how the piano came into their family and the paranormal interactions that they'd had with it just enchanted me growing up. So it's a lot of stuff like that, but as to more modern, true horror stuff, Get Out was literally the first horror movie that actually scared me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was shaking during Get Out.
Did you watch it in the theater?
I watched it in the theater. I watched it in the theater with a bunch of my friends from college, and I was shaking during Get Out. Yeah. As for, and then as for more recent stuff, I just recently heard the audiobook for The Taking of Jake Livingston, which is honestly a pretty good story. Yeah. It's a story about this young Black boy, only Black kid out of school, who has the ability to see ghosts, and the ghost of a school shooter starts harassing him.
Oh.
Yeah. And what else? Oh, and I think I've established already that like Black folklore is a big part of what, you know, got me interested in horror. I came across this one comic called Tales of Hoodoo Horror by Ooh. This artist, Malcolm Johnson. And he's an artist that I actually got to know and have worked with. And when I read this comic, it was amazing. It takes elements of black folklore, like mojo bags, and turns it into this very captivating horror tale that, you know, embodies the pulp comic era storytelling medium. You know, it's a very, is it entirely accurate? No, but it's a very good story. It's a very good story that, while reading it, I really felt like I had picked this comic up for 10 cents from a newsstand back in the 30s. You know, it's a fantastically written tale. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so those are all just, and sorry for such a long list, but those are all.
No, this is great. Like, I was actually going to say that, like, you know, normally I hear the same types of movies and books, you know, and authors over and over again. And no one has been able to list so many things that I am completely unaware of. So I'm actually really excited.
Oh, and there is one more things. I want to mention. Oh, please.
Yes.
Yeah. So this one, so as I said before, I feel very aligned with the concept of Afro surrealism, you know, really not just looking at, you know, Black identity, Black issues, Black trauma, and thinking, oh, this is scary, this is messed up, but like actually thinking, how does this shape the way you look at the world? And Ralph Ellison, Invisible Man, it's not a horror story, but it has, I was working on a Batman fan fiction before I even read Invisible Man. I came up with a character named Minstrel, Yeah, it's a very long story behind Minstrel, but as I was reading Invisible Man, I was stumbling on the same ideas, the same philosophies that I had while developing Minstrel in Invisible Man, you know, really looking at this idea of, I like how Invisible Man really explores how racism isn't just traumatizing, it can literally drive you insane. We actually see the narrator become insane, but he's not really becoming insane. That's the thing. He's not becoming insane. It's just he's seeing that the world was always insane, and being aware of that makes him look insane to everyone else.
Right.
And I love that. And it wasn't necessarily a huge influencer of my, of my style, of the way I look at horror and those stories that I write, but it definitely did have influence on me, and like I really connect with that. And I think that is surprisingly a very good book that I would recommend to anyone trying to get into Black horror. Like, if you want to get into Black horror, if you want to look, then I would say Invisible Man, because Invisible Man will show you how the Black experience, yes, it's traumatizing, but specifically it shows you how being aware of the world just completely reframes it, it completely changes the way you look at everything, so doing it basically changes reality itself.
That's a really interesting take on that. That's amazing. I'm gonna have to sit down and think about that after we get off of the call. All right, so let's tell our listeners where they can find more of your work, how we can support you as a writer.
Okay, so Well, listeners can follow me on my Instagram for updates about upcoming products I have coming out. I have my Batman fan fiction, A Maroon and Midnight Blue, which is about the Joker's adoptive nephew, who is a young Black boy who uses, well, he's not super young, he's a young Black man, I should say, who uses blackface aesthetics to sort of recapture the Joker's theme. But instead of doing, you know, random crimes like Joker, his crimes are retaliatory in nature. They are commentaries on racism in Gotham City. And that's a story that I've been working on for fun, but it's a passion project of mine. I'm working on a book. I'm really working on a book. I'm trying to finish it about a group of children at a magical school for Black people. That's a story I'm working on, and updates will be posted to my Instagram at KaliFaziz42. And as for people who just want to read Maroon and Midnight Blue or Mama Greylocks or some of the other stories that I have right now, I'm set up on afrovana.net. For those of you who don't know, Afrovana is this new online platform for Black writers and comic book creators. And my entire library is up there. That's my horror stories, my superhero stories, my fanfics, all of it is up there and ready to be read.
Awesome. Amazing. That I'm so excited. I had not heard of this Afrovana.
Oh yeah,
Yeah,
afrovana.net, AFROVANA.net. Yeah, definitely check it out.
Awesome. So we'll put a link to your Instagram and to Afrovana in the show notes, as well as have a list of the works that you recommended for folks to watch or read. Is there anything else that we can do to support you right now?
Anything else you can? Nah, this is just it, you know, like, I've been following this podcast for a while, and I was like, oh man, I want to be on this podcast. Yeah, so I'm just glad, you know, to post my story, and I really legitimately hope everyone enjoys it.
Yeah, and thank you for submitting the story. You know, I say this all the time to people, don't self-reject. You know, there are so many, I know that there are so many good stories out there that people are just afraid to send because they're afraid of the rejection. And, you know, a lot of stories, you know, the majority of stories do get rejected, but all it takes is that one acceptance for your work to be out there in the world. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And thank you so much for sharing your thinking behind this story. You know, like, I knew that this was an intellectual story, but like the depth of it, I didn't necessarily realize until having this conversation with you. So thank you for sharing all of those details. Thanks for joining us today, and I hope that you have an excellent day.
Thank you. I hope you have an excellent day too.